Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2013. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with the show is to provide ideas and share stories to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Tim Kuppler, who is here to share how to build a remarkable organizational culture. Tim is a culture expert that led multiple organizations through major culture transformations as a senior executive. Best practices from regional and global organizations he led have been featured in case studies, trade publications, webinars, and in the 2012 book, Leading Culture Change in Global Organizations. He then moved to the president role at Denison Consulting, an assessment and consulting firm that's worked on culture and leadership with over 5,000 companies. He consulted with leading organizations and supported education of clients and consultants at Denison, and as part of the Culture Advantage, an organization he founded to focus on building remarkable cultures with clarity and speed. He is also a business coach with AdvoCoach and has been passionately focused on the subject of culture for over 15 years. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for having me.
So when I talk about culture, I tend to start at the very basic level. What is culture? Because some people define it different ways. So I'd like to ask you, how do you define culture?
Sure. I and many others like to keep it simple and just refer to culture as how we do things around here. You know, it's a simple statement, but the work surrounding it can be really deep. So that's why there hasn't been a lot of clarity around how to effectively manage your culture.
And so the topic we're talking about today is building a remarkable culture. So I wanted to ask you about what is a remarkable culture then?
Well, I think there's two keys to a remarkable culture. One relates to the core of your culture, and the other is about how well you align and leverage that core. So, Heather, if you think about it, at the core, the individual value sets of employees need to be really well aligned with the stated company values. Those values on the wall or the website need to be alive in the organization, and people need to share those values. If this is the case, then drama, fear, lack of candor is really driven out of the organization and how we do things around here. So everyone is left with that remarkable feeling that they fit in that organization. Secondly, the organization needs to do a great job at building clarity and alignment in all areas with those values in mind. So their strategies, goals, measures, communication, all their other systems that they do work with, they need to be managed with a huge level of clarity and alignment so the organization's engaged on an ongoing basis to support a common purpose, and they really feel like they're on a mission together, leveraging that common core.
Okay, so is building a remarkable culture sort of an end to itself, or do you do that alongside something else like strategy execution? You know, are you building a remarkable culture in service of something else?
Well, I think that's where a lot of organizations may go wrong, is that culture may be relegated to another group to drive, or it's viewed as a separate entity from strategy. And I think that's when the quote from Peter Drucker that, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast really comes to life. You know, the approach for strategic planning and aligning and leveraging your unique culture rests with the top of the organization to really lead and drive together. So it's got to be led just like strategy and in an integrated approach. You know, one great change consultant I know told me she thinks the roles of a top leader, you know, are in two areas, to set strategy and manage culture. And I think that's a great way to think about it.
Okay, so just thinking about this idea of a remarkable culture, because I'm wondering, does a remarkable culture look the same from company to company, or does it change depending on different factors, or how can you tell what a remarkable culture looks like for your organization?
Sure. You know, I'm a deep believer that there's no one right culture, and getting culture right is about leveraging your unique culture. Yes, there are some common frameworks or hallmarks or characteristics that you want to see in any organization, and that kind of goes back to my feedback on what a remarkable culture looks like. But it's really more about understanding your unique culture and how you're hardwired from a value standpoint, and then building your own ongoing framework about how you bring that to life in all of your strategies, plans, measures, and other things.
Okay, so how do you measure culture then, and how can you measure to tell? What do you measure to tell that it's remarkable?
Sure, I've been doing culture surveys in some form, whether it's a business leader or consultant, for 15 years, and there's lots of traditional approaches out there, the annual culture survey, engagement survey, or other things. I do think it's important to assess two things, and it goes back to what a remarkable culture is. You need to understand that core and do something to assess it, and you also need to do something to really understand how well you're aligning around it based on the feedback of your employees. When it comes to assessing that core, there's some really amazing social technologies that are coming out on that front, where you can actually roll up people's individual value sets and understand how well that compares to your values on the wall or on your website. I've been using some social technology from a company called RoundPeg, and I can invite you to take this core values assessment. I see your results, you see mine. We get ideas on how to interact more effectively, but organizations can roll up that information, see how teams and their organizations hardwired from a value standpoint, and compare that to their stated company values. And it just provides a whole new language to really understanding your core.
Okay. So what do you measure to know if it's remarkable then? Is it
sure.
alignment, is there, what,
right.
what are the elements of a measurement like that?
Sure. From the core piece, you're trying to understand how well aligned those values sets are across the different members in the organization. So, if there's a lot of variety there, then, the organization hasn't done a great job at defining their core and hiring for cultural fit. So, there are measures around that aspect that are really coming to the forefront now. A lot of the traditional surveys may get at more around, clarity, alignment. How well are we managing our, vision and strategies, and how well are we empowering or engaging people? So those types of feedback surveys and approaches, they tell you more about how well you're aligning around that core. So, there's lots of different approaches. And in my ebook, I even, outlined a series of questions that kind of get at both pieces. How well are you defining, leveraging your core, and how well are you aligning everything you do in your organization around it?
Okay. So then what are the steps to building a remarkable culture?
Well, that's where the fun begins, I guess, because, there really isn't a lot of, information out there in a clear way about how to take your culture, let's say, from point A to point B. And I think it comes down to three key things. And, I've applied this over and over again. I think you really want to focus the effort on 1-3 clear performance improvement priorities. It's not a separate effort to build a remarkable culture. You want it directly steered at performance, so senior leaders feel engaged in the process, and they're managing culture and performance in a real integrated way. But you steer it at one or two top priorities. It might be growth, might be innovation, or something else. But it's then much more manageable. The second thing is you know, you have to have behavior in mind when you talk about steering it towards those performance priorities. So, you know, what are the core values you're leveraging or that you leverage well? And then when you think about what's holding you back from, you know, your performance goals or your full potential, you know, what's no more than 1 to 3 value or behavior shifts that you really need to support, you know, performance in the future? And then 3 is, you know, following an alignment plan, alignment framework to get your organization aligned about achieving that performance goal in a way that builds the behavior you need over time. So, you know, 3 steps, focus the effort on 1 to 3 clear performance priorities, you know, identify the role behavior plays and no more than 1 to 3, you know, value or behavior shifts to support the performance you need, and then a clear alignment plan to engage your organization, leverage your unique culture, and support that behavior shift over time. You know, that's the 3 steps, but, you know, I also broke out the alignment plan in kind of 3 steps, and starting with the foundation of your organization. Broke it out into a define, align, and manage framework that I can go into in more detail if you're interested.
Sure, please do.
Okay. Well, starting with the define aspect, you know, it's really important, like we talked about and you were talking about with measures, to evaluate your current culture and performance, get things steered towards, you know, 1 or 2 performance priorities, and that's part of clarifying your initial vision. You know, what's the remarkable culture really going to support from a performance standpoint? And part of define is also, you know, what's the role of behavior, and, you know, where are we doing a great job leveraging certain values? Where do we need to shift 1 or 2 things? It might be creativity, might be accountability or something else, but you complete that define step with a clear vision of the future and the role behavior is going to play in supporting that future. With the align segment, I mean, that's the part organizations typically do a pretty good job with. You know, they clarify strategic priorities, they engage teams and use other approaches to define goals, and they track measures. The problem is most organizations skip that define step about really thinking about what do we want to shift from a behavior standpoint. So they get involved in lots of mechanics of strategy and objectives, but they don't end up, you know, building the behavior they need for a remarkable culture. You know, once they've got the behavior and the alignment pieces done, then it's how they manage things on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, they're focused on making sure there's a real clear management system for priorities and goals, outstanding communication habits and routines, and then wonderful, you know, motivational processes that really encourage the right behavior and results. So, you know, the key to the process I advocate is, you know, all about really focusing on behavior and results in just, you know, 1 or 2 areas. The organization learns how to, you know, improve their culture over time. And then when you focus it on another improvement area, you're able to manage things even more quickly and effectively.
Okay, yeah, because one of the questions I was going to have was you wanted to narrow it down to, say, 2 or 3 behaviors and values. I was going to say, is 2 or 3 values and behaviors enough to shift an entire culture, or do you take it in steps?
Well, it should be more than 2 or 3. In fact, you know, a lot of the experts, you know, highlight the importance of focusing in on just 1 to 3. You know, values or behaviors, because you have to remember our values are hardwired into us at an early age. They're not easy to shift. So, you know, you want the whole organization really focused around a couple key things you're trying to build or shift over time. You know, when there's a lot of focus around that and it works and it, you know, and it's steered at a top performance priority, then it's easy to use those best practices again when you focus on another performance priority or another, you know, value or behavior.
Great. So another thing you talked about in your ebook is something called building culture muscle. Can you talk about what that is and why is it important?
Yeah, I mean, I love this concept. you know, think about the framework I just mentioned as far as, you know, defining a performance priority, a couple key behavior shifts, and then you start to define, you know, some key strategies or priorities that support that performance priorities. You know, I love engaging the organization in this process. You know, it might be a, you know, group of top leaders or a bigger team, and basically you use appreciative inquiry techniques or positive questions to create the future, and you brainstorm around how to improve that performance priority in some form. But you don't just brainstorm a long list. You know, we've all done that. You also have the team prioritize, you know, their top one or two ideas when it comes to, you know, improving that performance priority. And then, you know, whether it was one group or, you know, it can be done with a bunch of subgroups, you want to bring them together to agree on the, you know, one to three improvements overall. So they really feel a part of moving from a challenge or a brainstorming question to a few things that they've totally agreed and bought into as far as a couple things they're going to focus on as organization. And, you know, those are translated to some goals or measures for ongoing tracking, and then management's all about supporting and recognizing the positive work on those couple key areas. So I call it the concept of building culture muscle, because you're brainstorming and prioritizing quickly as a team. The first time an organization does that, you know, there might be a lot of uncertainty or a little bit of fear about how can I really be open in this process. But, you know, if management supports it, you know, in a real trust-building way, the next time they try it, it's even more effective. And they get at the real issues even more quickly and effectively. And then, you know, subgroups throughout the organization really start focusing on prioritizing as a team effectively, and the momentum builds.
Okay. So culture muscle is the idea of the organization's capability to shift its own culture, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And to engage people in how to do that effectively by focusing on just a few priorities. And that concept applies just in daily management. You know, I'm not talking about this just being about discussions around culture. You know, pick a priority. You know, it's more effective when you're engaging the people that are working on that priority, moving quickly to, you know, what action you're going to take and then executing it. People don't like, you know, brainstorming long lists and then seeing their feedback go nowhere.
So another question that comes to mind then is, some people talk about, we're using the term remarkable culture. Sometimes I hear the term high performance culture, and I was wondering if you would define those as the same thing, or are they different?
No, I put them in the same family, definitely. In my ebook, I even, you know, talk about different levels of culture evolution over time. I call it a culture maturity model, where, you know, organizations might move from a really reactive culture where the culture is really managing them. And then as they manage that foundation, that area, that explanation I talked about with define, align, and manage in key areas, they build a functional culture. Once they've got that common foundation, then they can become more collaborative and high-performing by breaking down barriers across organizational groups. And you know, the final stage is a high-performance culture, remarkable culture, or however that ideal culture is that you want to define.
So it seems like there's levels of, I mean, you talked about functional, which I'm guessing means basically it works, but on a limited basis, maybe.
You got it. You got
yeah,
it.
It just seems like the four levels are just levels of how much it works towards what you're trying to accomplish.
Exactly. Okay. And you can see results at all levels, but you're not really achieving your potential of what you could achieve if you were fully leveraging your culture and aligning it with your strategy.
It also seems like if you have good alignment across the organization, that there'd be a lot less frustration.
Yeah, I mean, I love to go at frustrations first, actually, in some of this work. You know, even with that building culture muscle concept when it comes to what improvements we need to make. I mean, I love to tell organizations, think about some of their biggest frustrations in managing their daily work in that area. You know, let's say they're trying to, you know, develop new products or new services. Well, as you do that now, what are the biggest frustrations you deal with? And then, you know, how do we prioritize around, you know, removing some of those frustrations and building something that's much better?
Yeah, you're really good at the sense of urgency there. You know, I really would like to get away from these things that are causing me frustration. So,
organizations to even talk about long service employees and, you know, those employees that can tell you about things that have always been that way. Because
right.
If you start removing some of those frustrations, then you can really get people on board that positive change is in the works.
Yeah, when they see proof that, oh, they're actually going to do something about it now.
Yeah. Well, and that's why focusing on just, you know, one or two performance priorities and one or two behavior shifts can build such momentum.
Yeah. So then why is culture change so difficult?
Well, you know, I go back to three main reasons culture change efforts fail, and they kind of align with the three things that I think are important if you want it to succeed. You know, the reasons they fail is that, you know, often there's no clear focus on performance and how culture plays a role. So it's not being steered towards a clear performance priority. It's being managed as some separate entity, and that just won't work. Secondly, you know, there's, you know, a lack of isolating expected behaviors and 1 to 3 value behavior shifts that are necessary to support that performance. So they leave behavior out. You know, they're trying to align strategies and plans, but they've got to go right at behavior in a couple key areas. And then the third thing is, you know, there's just a massive lack of clarity and alignment in organizations. So there's no clear framework on how people in the organizations are getting aligned around those first two things. What is the performance priority? And what is this, you know, behavior that we're going to leverage, and where do we need to shift it in a few areas? So, you know, strategies are unclear, maybe measures, goals, communication systems, there's, you know, weaknesses there in their foundation. So, you know, they've got to build that foundation, get clear about performance and the role that behavior will play.
So, and what role do leaders have in culture change?
Well, I mean, it starts with leaders. I mentioned that one opinion that, you know, top leaders need to be able to set strategy and manage culture. So it really goes back to top leaders setting the tone and walking the talk. And if they're not building an environment of trust where people are going to be open and share their ideas and share their concepts, things that, you know, are hardwired in them from a value standpoint, then they're never going to leverage their unique culture. So, you know, it's less about top leaders always, you know, setting so much of the direction and managing down. It's much more about, of course, leading and engaging the organization in this, you know, process I'm discussing here.
Mm-hmm. The show is aimed at an audience that is are leading change from the middle, so they don't necessarily have authority within the organization. So from that point of view, what advice would you give to someone who is maybe further down in the organization? How do they, I guess, get leaders to lead a culture change the way they need to?
I mean, that's a great question. I actually had that same question in another form when I was speaking at a university a couple weeks ago. Girl in the class said, you know, hey, I'm really not happy about my current culture at my organization. You know, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, you've got two choices. You know, you can either take action in your sphere of influence with your current manager, a peer, whoever it might be, you know, in your little pocket of the organization. Or, you know, your second choice is you can say, hey, this organization is just not a for, you know, how I'm wired from a personal standpoint, I need to start looking elsewhere. But change can start anywhere. And, I mean, it's that commitment to try and build something special in what I can influence as a starting point. and, you know, your conversation with a peer, your boss, whoever it might be, might be that spark to go at this in a more organized way, because you can manage your culture. You know, and the work I've done in the past always started in a division, department, or something like that. It wasn't always started from the top of the organization.
Whoever is feeling the most pain.
There's pain anywhere. You know, even in great organizations, there's frustration somewhere. So, you know, if you're figuring out what can I do from the middle of my organization, you know, you can start by, you know, working to align things with your manager or peers and applying some of these concepts about, hey, where is frustrations holding us back from performance, and how can we get a group aligned around one or two things we're going to make better, and let's talk about how we're going to behave together to support those one or two things and at least try to get the ball rolling in your sphere of influence.
Great. So we've talked a little bit about this ebook of yours, and so I wanted to give you a chance to talk about what that is and what it's about and who it's for.
Yeah, I mean, I spent many years kind of piecing together my own approach to culture, and then, you know, when I worked with lots of other organizations, I saw some of the same concepts applied, but yet they didn't have a clear framework either. So, you know, I worked to lay out a clear but flexible framework in this ebook called Building a Performance Culture, a Guide for Leaders. So, you know, your listeners can obtain that from me by just emailing me. It's tim@theCultureAdvantage.com, but it's the-culture-advantage.com, and I'll send them an executive summary of the ebook. If they love it, I'll give them the full ebook, or they can go to my website, theCultureAdvantage.com. Again, hyphens between each word, and they can download a copy for themselves.
Great. And how can people find out more about you?
There's information on my website. You know, I've got other tools and resources they can obtain there, and love to connect with them on LinkedIn.
Great. So if you were to tie a bow on our conversation, what would you want to make sure people take away from this conversation?
Well, first and foremost, you can manage your culture in a very clear way, and you have to do three things. You have to focus the effort on no more than one to three clear performance priorities. Two, you've got to identify the role behavior plays and a shift of no more than, you know, one to two key behaviors. And then third, you know, you've got to follow a clear alignment framework to bring things together, engage your organization, leverage your unique culture. So look for some best practices that are out there, leverage them. You know, you don't have to go it alone, and you can manage your culture in your sphere of influence wherever you are.
Great. Well, Tim, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Heather. Really appreciate it.
Great. And thank you for listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to be notified of future episodes and other resources to help you influence change in your organization, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter at inclaria.com. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you will also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty.
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be
Happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty.